Hi, Ray. How are you? I'm Tomo O'Brien, right? And I just got out of jail, and I moved to a toy, right? And I think that, like, I could be a presenter for your show, because, like, I could just tell people all about my life, you know, because I've had ups and downs, like everybody. And, yeah, I could probably tell everyone all about my life every week or something, even just a few minutes, like, you know, because to be interested. Me parole officer said I should get into something like a group or something, you know. So I think it'd be interesting and all to do it. So give me a ring or whatever, or I'll talk to you. Thanks.
Into Your Head, your regular dollop of drivel from a pie town, Ireland, featuring Neil O'Carroll and me, Joanne Farrell.
It's Into Your Head number 15, and it's been another eventful week here in the Into Your Head studios in the pie town. Fuck. And as I was saying, it's been another eventful week here in Public Art House. In fact, it's been an eventful 30 seconds here, because I've just knocked over a number of cardboard boxes which were resting on the bed here. Boxes which used to contain a computer, but they don't anymore. They don't contain anything. Their days of containing things are over. The cardboard box has really lived out its useful life as a cardboard box. I may at some stage allow it to be recycled and made into perhaps another cardboard box, but I assume that it's the cardboard, as part of the recycling process, is ground down into a mulch, and that the cardboard that made up this cardboard box will be mixed with other cardboard box, and will be only a 1 in 10 billion chance that the exact same cardboard box will be recreated with the exact same cardboard and not mixed with any other cardboard from any other cardboard box. And I suppose in a way that's how cardboard reproduces. It's not capable of having sex. If it did, it would be quite messy and the cardboard would become wet and soggy, and you'd have to dry it out on the radiator before you could proceed with the process. And you can't really have a manufacturing process like that. You need exactness in manufacturing. You need to know exactly where everything goes. You would need to know exactly how wet it becomes, exactly where the wetness is going to be, so you could aim the drying machine at it as it passes along the conveyor belt. And manufacturing is an exact science, so that just wouldn't work. I know this because I once worked in a Christmas tree factory. I actually had a summer job in a Christmas tree factory, and we used to pack Christmas trees like there's no tomorrow, and like there's no the next day, and no the next day, and no the next day. In fact, no more days until Christmas Day. In fact, we worked as if Christmas Day was coming just the next day, even though this was the middle of July. And I've noticed that the same factory now produces other items like patio heaters. We bought a patio heater that turned out to be from the same factory that I used to work in that made the Christmas trees, and it looked very familiar. I must say the patio heater is about the same height. It was made out of similar metal and branches, and it had wires coming out of it, and it had a heat when you switched it on, and it rang on gas. So in that respect, it wasn't remotely like the Christmas trees that we used to make there. But I still hold a sentimental attachment to that factory, and I'm happy that I have one of their products now sitting in my backyard, being used whenever we feel the need to use it, or the desire to use it, because you don't have to have a need. I mean, if we only did things that you needed to do, then we'd never do anything. You can do anything that you want to do. So there's a free world. I mean, Professor Stephen Hawking said that in his theory of neediness. It was Abraham Maslow, actually, who used to learn about in economics or in marketing in college. Abraham Maslow was the guy who came up with a hierarchy of needs, whereby he said when a human being's basic needs, like food, water and air and shelter, are satisfied, then he moves up in the pyramid and he wants the next level of stuff. He wants CDs and a cat and a car and other stuff. And then when he has all that, he moves up to the luxury items. He starts to desire the luxury items like swordfish and expensive houses and podcasting equipment and various stuff like that. So that was Abraham Maslow for you. There was a lot of characters like that that we studied in my accounting and finance course in college. We did we studied a guy called John Maynard Keynes or something, and he invented a system of drawing economic situations on a graph where you could draw supply and demand and put a little squiggly line through, and that would be the demand. You'd put another line going the other way, and that would be the supply. And yeah, you put in two dots and a little smiley mouth and a couple of ears. And that's how I invented my first Matchstick Cats cartoons, which you can see at matchstickcats.com. I drew them all during the economics when I was supposed to be learning about the supply theory of something or other. And I was never really into macroeconomics. I was more into microeconomics myself. That's where the real stuff is. That's where you're selling little microorganisms in a pet shop and selling them in little plastic bags to little people who come and pay for them in tiny little coins. And that's microeconomics for you. Macroeconomics is it's a computing term. You use a macro, it's a type of program, and you program the country basically to do what you want over the coming year. That's what the finance minister does every year when he announces his budget. He writes a little computer program, and he programs the country to do whatever he wants. Everything is connected up to his little laptop computer that he has in his briefcase, and it's all plugged in, and he presses a button and the software starts running, and it automatically orders 100 new buses for Dublin Bus, and it builds a few roads, and it makes adjustments to the welfare amounts and stuff like that. And that's all absolutely fantastic. It's a bit like that briefcase that the American president carries that has a button in it that he can use to blow up the world if he ever has a bad day. Except it doesn't blow up the world. We're peaceful people here in Ireland. We're a neutral country. We all wear neutral colours like white and beige. In fact, my house is decorated entirely in beige. It's a new house. Excuse me. And when we moved in, the builders had painted all the inside walls beige. And it's a neutral colour, obviously, because they're not sure who's going to buy the house. And they don't want to appeal to everyone. They don't want to alienate people who don't like non-neutral colours. They don't want to be making a political stance through their walls.
I'm Shawnee Grega, and this is Athy Weekly World News, your petty little world, neatly packaged in an audio bottle, with a cute little note inside containing the news. Local residents groups have welcomed a new initiative to slow the rise in property prices in Athy. A miniature-scale model of the town is to be built, with tiny working models of every building currently in existence. Planners say that the cost of the model home will be far less than the current average for real houses in the area, and their very presence on the market is likely to drag down prices all round. It's expected that Athy's model village will be situated a short distance from the town, within driving distance of all amenities. Councillors have proposed a new design for the long-awaited Athy Relief Road, pointing out that the main cause of Athy's bottleneck is the lack of a second bridge over the River Barrow. The town manager explained that the obvious way to fix this is to split the river in two, so that half of it runs under the north end of the main street, as before, but the other half flows under a brand new bridge, further down the street. It's said that this will ease the strain on the old bridge, thereby allowing the water to flow more smoothly and preventing the daily traffic jams that plague the town. Local campaigners have welcomed the fresh proposal, but expressed doubt as to its workability and stuff. Athy Weekly World News has learned that the number of patients presenting with hip injuries at Nace General Hospital has quadrupled in the last month. The cause is thought to be the new 5 km per hour speed limit in the Brandswood estate in South Athy. Motorcyclists attempting to keep within the law are losing balance and toppling over sideways as a result of trying to drive too slowly. Local resident and moped owner Neil O'Carroll described the situation as a catastrophe waiting to happen. He then went on to point out that he had just used a word containing cat for the 15th time that day, and wondered aloud whether this was a record. Asked for a reaction, a spokesperson for the Guinness Book of Records was said to be catatonic. A Dublin college has declined to answer any questions about an alleged street brawl which reportedly involved up to 200 students on an organised drinking tour in Athy's main street last week. One eyewitness reported seeing a Chinese-looking army tank try to run the whole damn lot of them over. Meanwhile, none of the students who we contacted wished to make any comment. Local police said they had nothing to say about the situation. Asked what should be done about the incident, the town mayor said, "I have nothing to say at this time, although that may change later." And shoppers in Athy's main thoroughfare were conspicuous by their absence this morning. Not one single person was out in the town's biggest shopping street. In fact, most of the shops appeared to be closed. Meanwhile, a local radio news editor has stated that, while he admires the enthusiasm of his reporters, it might be more productive for these inquiries to be conducted during daytime hours. Two men were released on bail today after a regularly scheduled sporting event at Athy Boxing Club suddenly erupted into violence. Witnesses claim both participants were seen to throw punches at each other, and it's been alleged that both came fully prepared for a fight, armed with gum shields and so-called boxing gloves, which they had claimed were simply to keep their hands warm. Athy's first ever virtual protected building was officially declared this week. Despite being almost 3 years old and having only a small handful of regular visitors, the IntoYourHead.com Stalkers Forum guestbook was declared off-limits for developers, effectively meaning it can never be demolished. The move has been welcomed as far afield as Canada and North America. The Stalkers Forum guestbook can be found at IntoYourHead.com. Meanwhile, it's been announced that those wishing to stalk the website's owner may now do so by calling, text messaging or faxing a 24-hour stalkers hotline or emailing studio@intoyourhead.com. Details of the telephone numbers can be found in the show notes on your iPod or at www.intoyourhead.com. I'm Shawnee Groya, and that was Athy Weekly World News, an oasis of truth in a desert of strawberries and ice cream.
Now, in the past few days, it's been announced that some country or other has decided to test a nuclear bomb. Now, this happens every year or two. Somebody decides, I've got a nuclear bomb, and I'm sick of sitting here looking at it, and I'm damn well going to set it off under the sea or something and see whether it works, because someday I might want to use it, and I want to see whether it works. I'm going to blow it up and explode it all over the place, and if it works, then I'll know that I've got a working nuclear bomb, and I'll know that if I ever need a nuclear bomb, I can just set it off again after I reassemble it. And if it doesn't work, if it doesn't blow up, then at least I haven't wasted a nuclear bomb. And that's fine. So either way, we're on to a winner here. But of course, everybody got all upset. That country there is testing a nuclear bomb. That's not on. We're the only people who are supposed to have nuclear bombs. Other people aren't supposed to have them. I mean, unless it's some sort of a heating system for their homes or something. You're allowed to have nuclear bombs morally if you're using it to heat houses and power telephone lines and things, but not if you're going to use it to blow people up or threaten them. I mean, apparently you can't be blowing people up. I mean people aren't balloons, you know. You can't just fill them up with air or helium and see how big they'll get before they burst. I mean, I know a lot of people do that when they're eating and they make themselves burst with food, but you can't just maliciously blow air into people or pump them up and blow them up, because that's just antisocial. And that's why the UN and the United Nations and all these other organizations object so strongly to nuclear bombs being tested. They know that when you're testing a nuclear bomb, you're not doing it as an act of maliciousness. You just want to see whether it works. I mean, you're like a kid who's got a scrambled egg and he wants to throw a car windscreen, but it's a whole month until Halloween and he knows you're only supposed to do it on Halloween night, but he can't wait. I mean, he's a kid, he gets excited about these things and life is too short. So that's why you find that around the 15th of September every year you get a scrambled egg or a fried egg thrown at your windscreen and some farting gas let loose into your exhaust pipe. That's what they do around here, that's the tradition. And you'll find some kid comes to your door dressed as a witch and ask you if you want any of your grass cut. And he got an awful surprise when I say yes, because my grass does need cutting. I haven't cut it for several weeks, and it's got to the stage where it's about to stop growing, but it's so long that I'm going to have to cut it sometime before the winter. I can't just leave it like that, or the neighbours will think that I'm some sort of a non-grass cutter person. I don't want the neighbours to think that I'm one of those persons who doesn't get up at 8 o'clock on a Saturday morning and start up a loud lawnmower and annoy everybody. Because then they'll think I'm untidy or something, and I care what people think about me. I'm only human. Us humans, you know, we're social people, and we worry about what other people think about us.
Hello, I'm Dustin Meehan, and when I'm in Ireland, I listen to Into Your Head.
Beings is a stupid name anyway. I mean, why don't you have doings or amings or wasings for dead people? I mean, beings. I'm being now, so I'm a human being, because I'm being. I'm carrying out the act of being me. But my grandparents were carrying out the part of the act of being them. So they're wasings. They're human wasings, because they were humans. Well, I suppose warings if you refer to them in the plural, or wasings if you're just talking about one of them. So my grandparents was each a wasing. Or they're collectively known as warrings. Actually, warring sounds like the name of some sort of a bird, which would explain a lot. I think I evolved from a bird, because I've got 2 feet for a start. I don't have any wings, but I've got a mouth. I suppose it's a bit like a beak, and I've got 2 eyes, the same as a bird does, and I've got a nose, and I've got ears and hair, just on my head and my face, and some other bits and pieces, so not all over like a bird. I haven't got feathers, I haven't got feathers, and I don't have webbed feet, because I'm not a duck. But wasings don't have webbed feet either. I mean, my grandparents didn't have webbed feet, they had ordinary feet just like me. In fact, they're from the same line of ancestry as me, so I suppose you'd expect that they have the same type of feet as I do. I mean, for your grandparent to have a different type of foot than you is really saying something. If your grandparent, for example, has paws instead of feet, then that means that in the space of 2 generations, your family has evolved from being some sort of animal with paws into being a human with feet. And that's quite a fast evolutionary rate. I mean, for most species, it takes millions of years for them to evolve that far. I mean, dinosaurs didn't grow feet over 2 generations. It took them many thousands of years to evolve into humans and then later into monkeys. So, yeah.
How are you all? How's it going? I'm Tomo O'Brien, right? I'm Tomo O'Brien at large here on IntoYourHead.com. You know, your man Neil, he's a bit mad in the head, like, but he let me have a spot here on his old podcasty show thing, you know? Me and me ma have moved here to Tuy, because, you know, had to get out of Dublin and all, but that's another story. And I'm just going to tell you all about my life and all, because it's pretty good, you know. I just got out of jail to joy. And, you know, we don't really need to get into why I was in there and all, but, like, it's alright, bud, I'll get on to it later. Sorry. And, what was I going to say to you? Yeah, I'll have a lot to say every week, because you know, I'll probably be off me head, but I mean, that'll probably just make it better. Oh, and if me old parole officer bud, if you're listening, I won't really be off me head. I'm only saying it, right? Just, you know, for fun and stuff. And I'll tell you all about the joy. And that's about it, really. I just wanted to introduce myself and all. And my ma, Regina, is at home with the two babbies. Brooklyn and Massachusetts. Because, like, you know, she just heard those names and she just thought that they were lovely, you know. Like, and I just said, yeah, that's grand. Whatever you're into, you know. So, like, it's up to the ma to think up the names and all that stuff for the babies, you know. Because, I mean, I'm a lad. Like, I don't fucking think about things like that.
Have you got a license for that cat? I know your face. I'm a police officer. Come here.
All right, bud. It's all right. Don't be worrying about it, bud. Look, lads, I have to go, all right? I'll talk to you soon. Bye.
Oh, I have a cat, a little cat. She's really, really little, but she's not fat. She's a cat, a fearsome cat. She goes meow, meow, and you'd think she was real little, 'cause she is. But she's fearsome and she catches mice. No problem to her. She's a cat who's not fat. She's a cat who's fearsome. She catches mice, whatever you want to call them. She's a cat who catches mice. Mouse number two. She's my cat, little Pippi. I love you.
Now, it's been in the news this week that the pop singer Madonna has adopted a child from Africa or somewhere, and she's going to adopt it and make it hers, and she's going to dye it white so it'll fit into the family. And I think that's absolutely fantastic. I applaud that sort of thing. I think it's great. I think if there's stray children running around without parents, I think somebody should come and adopt them and bring them into their family and look after them, as far as I'm concerned. But the family now are saying they want to have a look at her house and make sure that it's all okay. They want to see that it's a proper house she's going into, because they're worried that she might be some male who's just bringing this kid to trying with as a prostitute and make money out of it. And I can understand their concerns. I mean, I wouldn't give a child away to some pop star who's got nothing to speak about except millions and millions of quid. I mean, she could be homeless for all we know. I mean, I've never seen her home. I mean, I assume she lives somewhere, but whether it's a house or a flat or a bedsit or a cardboard box at the side of the street, I have no idea. She goes on TV. When she goes on TV, she appears in studios and things. She never appears in her house. So she could be just making all that up, and she could be some hobo off the street. And I wouldn't, if I was an Ethiopian or a South African or something, I wouldn't give up my child to some homeless person to live in a cardboard box just because I didn't want the kid anymore. I mean, that's not fair. You can't be doing that. And I really think this thing needs to be looked into. I think Madonna should come out with the proof. Prove that she has a house. Prove that she's got an income of some sort, whether it's a pension or some sort of social welfare or whatever. She needs to bring out the proof and the documentation, because otherwise she's just bullshitting us. She just could be anyone. I mean, the Madonna was a character from the Bible who hung around with Jesus, and if Jesus was into her, well, that means she probably lived by the same and moral code as Jesus. And Jesus was kind of the Mother Teresa persuasion. He would go around in just the minimum clothes and not have any wealth to his name, and he'd just have the minimum amount of clothes and possessions, and just live a cheap, simple life and not have any posh houses or anything. And if Madonna is named after someone in the Bible, there's a good chance that she's like that. I mean, you see Madonna going around, she's wearing almost nothing. She's just wearing these skimpy little things that are made out of potato sacks, just like Mother Teresa did. Mother Teresa only had one item of clothing in her possession, and she it was a skimpy little thing, just like what Madonna wears, and so you know that it certainly is a worry if you're going to give up your kid to Madonna.
Hello, I'm Joanne Farrell, and welcome to this week's lecture, my beginner's guide to intermediate level psychology. Now, I'm going to assume that you have all done a beginner's course in psychology at some point. This isn't bloody kindergarten. And although I, your lecturer, have absolutely no qualifications whatsoever in this field, I would like to assure you that my boyfriend has read the book, The Tipping Point, which includes a section on the psychology of Sesame Street. So I do know what I'm talking about. The human mind begins its development the moment we are born. By the age of 6 weeks, most children are able to perform basic calculus. They choose not to, because they don't really have any need for it just yet. So they tend to forget all of the mathematics that they acquired in the womb. And that's why we have to waste 15 years going to school and relearning it all. I, as a baby, wrote several books on the subject of child development. Sadly, my parents thought they were just doodles and scribbles, and they probably looked like that because the only writing implements I had were crayons. I submitted them to several publishers, but met only with prejudice and ignorance. It seems that the book industry only wants to publish rubbish romance novels, stuff like this. He held her warmly by the neck and told her he was itchy, but that it was okay, that he would resist the urge to scratch himself, and that he would live with it, just for her, because he loved her even more than his teddy bear, and he would do anything for her. She replied, "Ah, go ahead, knock yourself out." So he did. He used one of those giant inflatable hammers which are harmless, so he didn't really knock himself out, but he pretended. And when he collapsed to the floor, he hit his head and really did knock himself out. She gasped and called the emergency services. When the operator finished laughing, he dispatched a fire engine and a couple of mountain rescue dogs who had nothing else to do that afternoon. But they didn't care. They were freaks. The type of freaks who put their Christmas decorations up in mid-October. And they like being freaks. And, as far as they were concerned, the rest of the world could feck off. They knew what they wanted. They wanted to laugh at everyone else laughing at them. And eat chocolate. That sort of crap. Anyway, by the age of 12, all children are evil. Don't worry, that's normal. But try to resist the urge to hang donuts on the pointy Satan-style ears that develop at this stage. They don't like it, because they think you are mocking them by putting a halo-shaped object over their heads. Which, of course, you are. But there's no need to be insensitive. After all, we were all teenagers once. At 18, the average young person is an alcoholic. Drug-addicted, lonely, nervous wreck with no belly button. And very poor taste in footwear. Don't worry, that's normal too. Actually, hang on a minute. No, it's not. Damn it. Well, go see a doctor or something. By the age of 25, most people are preparing themselves for death, which is a bit premature because life expectancy has risen dramatically over the last couple of 100 years. I really should update this stuff more sometimes. Anyway, here are some useful tips from the world's top psychologists to help you stay content throughout this life. Sweets make you happy. Be sure to eat plenty of those. Don't drink diet cola. Drink proper fat coke. Be happy. Watch cartoons as much as you can. Windows are good. They let in light and make it feel more daytimey, except at night. Always make sure your bed is facing the door. Never wear horizontal stripes on television. Bananas should be kept separate from other fruit to prevent premature rotting. Well, that's all I can tell you. If you're not an expert in this stuff now, I don't know what the hell else I can do for you. I have been Doctress Joanne Farrell for the Into Your Head Adult Learning Programme.
Now, I've just come back from seeing a film called The Departed. It's a Martin Scorsese film, or a Martin Scorsese picture, as he likes to call it. He doesn't do moving films. He just draws pictures and he just hands them to a director, and the director turns the picture into some sort of a movie. He likes to draw pictures in 2D on a on paper or papyrus. He uses a marker, and sometimes if he wants to put in a colour, he adds in watercolours. And of course, that's what brought up the controversy when his movie Taxi Driver came out in the 1970s, because at the end there was a very bloody scene, and I won't give away the ending in case you haven't seen it yet, because it's only been out for three decades, and I know people hate spoilers. But there's a particularly bloody scene at the end, and the censor told the director that he had to make the blood a little less bright, so he could allow him a little less red, and they adjusted the picture colour accordingly. But when Martin Scorsese drew the picture for that movie, he actually used blue. He was out of red crayon at the time, and it was particularly interesting because as a result of this, Martin Scorsese was later applying for a visa to travel to some country or other, and he was told, no, we saw that picture you drew, your blood is blue, that's not healthy, you've got some sort of disgusting disease or something, we don't want you in our country. So he was turned back at several airports while trying to go about his business and his world travels all because of that picture. And it just goes to show, you can never have too much stationery in stock. Now, I suppose that last statement of mine isn't completely true. I mean, if I was given a business course, I'd have to point out that if you have too much of anything in stock, then it means your turnover is too low, and you're going to have too much of your money, your cash, tied up in assets, and you're going to end up having a cash problem. So it's not true to say that you can never have too much stationery in stock, particularly if you're dealing in stationery for a living. You shouldn't have too much stationery in stock. You should keep your stationery moving. So it should be non-stationary. It should be continuously moving. If you have stationary, then you're going to have a problem on your balance sheet, because it just won't balance. I mean, the left will be higher up than the right, or the right will be higher up than the left, and there'll be things written in red, which isn't good. I mean, I told you about the problem with Martin Scorsese, where he ran out of red crayon. He had actually used up all the red crayon doing his balance sheet, and that's a whole other problem that I won't go into, and that's how he went into making all these dreary, dark, bleak films in the 1970s, like that one about Vietnam, where the soldiers are forced to play Russian roulette, The Deer Hunter. He was just depressed after seeing all this red stuff on his balance sheet, and that's a lesson for you. He had too much stationery, and still he didn't have enough red crayon for his picture. And he ended up being stopped at airports. So it's a fine balance. You can have too much stationery and you can have too little. You can have an adequate amount of stationery, but not have enough of the right types. So you have to sort out, categorise your stationery. You have to have enough blue crayons and enough red crayons and enough biros and enough typing tissues. Those are the tissues that you put over your keyboard for hygienic reasons, if you don't want to touch a keyboard that someone else uses. It's similar to the sort of things that you put on toilet seats. Stationery, it's very, very hard to keep track of. I work in an office that uses a lot of stationery myself. And we don't usually have problems with it. I mean, I work for the Irish government. We're a well-oiled machine. I don't mean mean in the sense of being unkind or ungenerous. I mean mean in the good sense. I mean a mean, lean grilling machine, as George Foreman likes to call his special low fat grill, and we've got one of them. They're absolutely fantastic. I used to do chops on it until I started going out with someone who doesn't like chops, and then I stopped doing chops on it. But sometimes when she goes out for 10 minutes, I sneak into the kitchen and burn a couple of lamb chops just for old time's sake. I don't eat them. I don't like to eat meat. I'm against it. I think it's cruel to eat meat. So I just cook the meat and then throw it out, and then that way the animal doesn't suffer at all. Its mother suffers if it happens to pass the window at the time and sees one of its children on the grill. But of course, lambs. don't mother past 3 months. So once the lamb is up to 3 months, its mother has abandoned it anyway and gone off to adopt a kid from Ethiopia or somewhere. That's a baby goat. It's gone off to adopt another lamb because it's forgotten about its own offspring. And a lot of animals are like that. They just abandon their kids after a few months and go off and get on with their lives, and the kids have to fend for themselves. That's fine. That's just the way the world is. That's the way the cookie crumbles and the way the biscuit breaks down and the way the cake consolidates. Well, I suppose deconsolidates, because that's consolidating is a bit too positive to be a word to apply when you're trying to say that it's breaking down. And I suppose really that's all I have to say for this week. I'd like to thank my contributors, Joanne Farrell, Grania Shoiga, who does the news, and my brand new crime correspondent, you'll be hearing a lot more of in future shows. What the hell's his name again? Something O'Brien. Tomo O'Brien, yeah, Tomo, good man, Tomo. You're great, and you're very welcome on board. And if you'd like to contribute to the program, just ring the Stalkers Forum helpline. You'll find a number on the screen of your iPod right now, or if you just go to intoyourhead.com, you'll find the phone numbers there, and you'll also find a Stalkers Forum guest book and an email address. I suppose I could just tell you the email address. It's studio@intoyourhead.com. And frankly, if there's, I know there's people out there listening. So if you're listening to this show and I don't know you, if you're not one of my friends, I appreciate it very much if you just take 10 seconds to write me an email, send a voicemail saying, hello, I listened to one of your shows. I thought it was crap, or I thought it was okay, or it passed 20 minutes in a traffic jam. Just let me know you're there. Think of it as a sort of a roll call. I'm sounding very serious at the moment. I must go back to sounding ridiculous. You'll say something ridiculous. George Michael.